In this episode of the Smart City Podcast, I had a fantastic conversation with Merrick Spain. So Merrick is the Smart Cities Lead for Telstra. Merrick and I discussed about the importance of community and civic innovation in the smart city space, and also the importance of developing a data culture before we get too excited about the tech. We also discussed some of the projects and things that Merrick is working on, particularly in the smart region space. Merrick's favorite term is smart from the start, which I also really enjoy. We also talk about the emerging trend of genuine collaboration. As always, I hope you enjoy listening to this episode as much as I enjoyed making it.
It's the Smart City Podcast, whoa, with smart city experts, here we go. Connecting smart technology, both big and small. Smart cities are making life better for all. Big data, emerging trends, self-driving cars and more. The Smart City Podcast is what you're looking for.
Hello, Merrick. How are you today?
Zoe, I'm fantastic. How are you?
I am very well. I'm so excited that we finally coordinated our calendars and got this interview underway. So I'm excited.
It is great to be with you.
Awesome. Okay, well, let's jump straight into this. And can you tell us a little bit about your background and what you're passionate about?
Sure. So, you know, with the benefit of hindsight, looking back on my career, it's fair to say that I've always been interested in and therefore gotten involved in emerging technology spaces. And when I say technology, I do mean telecommunication and traditional ICT, but I do also include other things like robotics and RFID and process automation and really anything where any kind of technology is used in innovative ways to make a difference. And I guess, the interest for me in emerging spaces is that's where there's a lot of mystery, and there's this kind of imperative to go out and build your understanding and your thought leadership, and then help other stakeholders to understand those emerging technologies and what they mean for their organizations and their businesses, and in the case of smart cities, for the way that individual citizens live, work, play, learn, and innovate.
Yeah, awesome. So, tell us what your role is and what kind of sparked your interest in this smart city space.
Sure. So I guess a number of the industries I'd been involved in before exposed me to, you know, discussions and networks of people that gave me an early understanding of kind of what was coming, especially in terms of things like the Internet of Things, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, I had identified this smart cities and community space as really a great place for me to leverage the experience that I have, mostly because it provided kind of the sandpit opportunity to start making a difference, to the future. And not just for other people and other businesses, but obviously there's that feedback loop that comes all the way back to myself and my children. You know, so it was this unique opportunity to get involved in something that does involve technology, obviously, which, as I said, is kind of the backdrop to most of my career, but is more about using, you know, the application of that technology for society. So I'd been watching that for some time and thinking about, you know, how to position myself to get involved. My current role is as the Smart Cities Lead for Telstra nationally, and in that role I get to do everything that I was hoping to be able to do, I knew that working for an organization like Telstra was going to be a valuable position in this space, because it is complex, because it crosses over a number of sectors. It's a multi-sector sort of engagement, and because it's a slow burn, really, because of the complexity and because of the strong linkages into all of the stakeholders who need to be involved.
Yeah, definitely. So tell us what a smart city means to you.
So I must confess, I don't madly love the name smart city. I agree with what I think is a rising tide of opinion around that, mostly because, you know, the word smart indicates that technology is the primary focus. And it also indicates that there is an outcome, and I think neither of those things is true. I think technology is genuinely an enabler to the space, and that it's not an outcome, but instead is a process and more a frame of mind, I guess, along that journey. City is also not awfully helpful because Many regional urban locations don't see themselves as cities and aren't officially classified as such. But in a country like Australia, it's really important that this isn't just about the Sydney, Melbourne and Brisbane's of the world, but instead this is also about, you know, the regions where, you know, more than a third of our population lives and works. So that was always important. Look, to me, you know, having had 4 or 5 years to think about it, you know, to me, smart city is the opportunity to make a difference in terms of the human experience. So it's really the technology enabled, you know, global movement to positively impact the human experience as the human experience plays out in functions like living and working and you know, innovating. And as they relate to geospatial areas, whether they be precincts or broader communities and whole cities and rolling up to regions and ultimately the nation.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And I'm with you with the term smart city. I think it's the best we have at the moment, and that's what people know what the term is. However, I totally, yeah. Smart regions, smart communities. I love those terms. But even, yeah, I agree with you again with the smart, that technology is the focus. Technology isn't and shouldn't be the driver, should only be the enabler to actually make, you know, places better for humans that are living there. So more accessible, livable and sustainable. So yeah, I really like, cause I've been thinking about this as well. I've been talking about how smart city is actually a framework or a way of thinking about things. So yeah, cool. I'm glad we're on the same page there.
That's right. Recently I've started to really become fond of the term civic innovation, which I think more neatly encapsulates really what this is about and the goals that we should all be working towards without the negative implications that are involved in the current use of the term smart city.
Yeah, cool. So tell us why you think that this term, not the term. Tell me why you think the concept is so important.
So look, I think it's important for some kind of universal reasons, and then it's important for some specific reasons that do differ depending on, I guess, individual cities and communities, because they are all different in terms of, you know, where they're at and what challenges they face and what opportunities they'd like to go after. But I think universally we know from extensive research that we've invested in over the past 5 years that, you know, I guess because of the fact that we all have a smartphone in our hands and we've seen the rising level of kind of utility that we all individually get in our business lives and in our, you know, personal lives, what that means is that there's this kind of rising tide of digital aspirations or digitally intertwined aspirations. So people are wanting, you know, to have better outcomes in terms of how they live and work and, you know, spend their time. But they understand that technology has an important role, you know, to play in that. And so what they're looking for is they're looking to see the use of technology to do exactly that. And you know, in addition to that, their own ability to access that technology and access the information that can provide to provide increasing levels of comfort, convenience, choice, and connectedness.
Yeah, cool. No, I really like that. And I think that is why it is important. So let's talk about Australia. Obviously, Telstra is all around Australia, and we need to think nationally about this. So I'm interested to hear how you think that Australia is embracing the smart city concept.
So I'd say, you know, in general, my kind of overarching comment would be fairly slowly, but in recent times, and I mean the last 12 or 18 months, with a much broad and accelerated level of interest. In the early years, there was a lot of skepticism, understandably, because large global technology vendors kind of, in the interests of, you know, their own organizations were, you know, focusing fairly heavily on the technology side of things. But I think city leaders in early adopters kind of locations, intuitively knew that, you know, this shouldn't be a technology led kind of space. I think, you know, we've started to see more than just the original early adopters start to take an interest and to actually do things. Spending time developing smart city strategies, aligning those with their digital strategy, obviously, and looking at small pilot and proof of concept opportunities just to position themselves to understand the technology and what the implications of that technology are for process and for structure as well as for community engagement. But then also to start to look at, you know, what is the technology can do for some of the opportunities and challenges that are immediate in each community. And they could be very different, from public safety to water security to, efficiency in some of the services that, that the city council has to deliver, et cetera. So, it's good to see that new sectors are coming on board quite strongly. So the built form environment is a sector that we've had increasing engagement with over the last 12 or 18 months and doing some pretty innovative things with them. I think they're an important stakeholder in terms of ensuring that the greenfields investments that we're making are what I call smart from the start, because in 15 or 20 years' time, if they're not, we're going to be living in a very different world, and those investments will mean that we have infrastructure that really is not awfully useful in terms of delivering to those rising digital aspirations, where people are making more and more intentional decisions about where they live and work and play, and those decisions are indelibly linked up with what technology can do.
I agree. I'm keen to hear about some of those projects and things that you're currently working on.
Sure. So we have a pretty broad set of capabilities that we've developed over the last 5 or so years, and that's because we fundamentally see our value proposition predominantly being aligned to the overall journey that a city or community needs to take. And given that this journey is an integrated one where individual pieces of technology need to be deployed, for their own, to deliver some distinct benefits in the areas that they pertain to, but that those technologies all really need to link together and integrate into a bigger picture approach that aligns with what the unique value proposition and what I call the DNA of a community is, so that they're kind of achieving the macroeconomic results, which is about attracting more people and getting more people to start up businesses and getting local innovation ecosystems, to start accelerating and building to offset some of the digital disruption that's going to happen, et cetera, et cetera. So, largely the buckets of activity that we have are, human-centered strategy and design. That's really important because cities and communities need to have a vision of the future. They need to have a strategy for how they're going to approach this. And the roadmap of investments they're going to make in technology and the partnerships they're going to build need to align with, some of those strategic imperatives that I was talking about a minute ago. Second of all, data. As they say, data is the new oil. I was asked recently, what is the one thing I would do to most significantly impact, this space? And my answer is that really, you might consider putting some of the technology on hold for a few years while we build what I call a data culture, which means an aggregate understanding across, stakeholders in different sectors of how we leverage data. There's a universe of data out there that really represents the context in cities and communities. And without that context, potentially we're making investments in technology almost for technology's sake, which I think would be a great issue. And if we can build that data culture, we will be able to understand why we're investing in which technologies, where, and how. That then goes to the very point of this whole exercise, which is starting to have an impact at that macroeconomic level. The third area that we're investing in, obviously, is technology. We have built out an ecosystem of capability that continues to evolve either through partnerships, or through venture investments, or through mergers and acquisitions. And increasingly, we're looking at new and emerging areas to build that ecosystem of capability out. And then finally, the bit that I guess is our core historically, which underpins all of this, which is the network. People increasingly need a network that is going to be able to scale to the billions and billions of things that are going to need to connect. And a network that is going to have the ability to offer some of the unique functionality, like really low latency, to enable those massive machine-to-machine communications that, you know, will comprise some of the new applications that we'll see coming to the fore in the coming years.
Yeah, that's awesome. I'm really keen to hear about some of the work you're doing in regional Australia, if you can share anything.
Sure, absolutely. Look, I'm personally very excited about that part of it because, you know, those smaller regional places have really, you know, they really struggle with unique problems. And I think it's a great outcome when a small regional community can leverage technology to solve some immediate problems, you know, and frankly, there's some nice folk out there. You know, when you get into a room with those people, they're really open to dialogue. They're really open to learning. And so it's a great experience overall. You know, and I often tell the story that some of our first tangible deployments of technology in the space were out in the regions. And that speaks to the fact that they have, you know, burning issues that they're looking to solve. They're looking to, you know, offset the fact that they are really disproportionately disadvantaged, in terms of, you know, funding and resources. They have the problem or the tyranny of distance, which makes their problems, you know, sometimes more difficult, to deal with. And on the other hand, they also have this great, what I call sea or tree change opportunity, which is that increasingly people like you and I, Zoe, as we know, are choosing to live in the regions because technology means we don't have to live in a big city necessarily to do a lot of the jobs that we do these days. And if I, you know, if I can be on planes 3 or 4 days a week, and then live in a part of the world which has a really strong sense of community, in my case, is really close to some great natural, you know, beauty and beaches and that kind of stuff. And I don't have to contend with an hour or two of traffic to and from work. Well, that just makes for a pretty compelling story. And we've heard that kind of narrative repeated time and time again in some of the experiences of those regional communities.
Yeah, cool. Well, let's talk about integration, because I imagine you would have to integrate across and throughout your career a lot of different disciplines, a lot of different agencies, you know, across the board. So keen to hear how you think we can and do this integration piece better in the future, or whether you think we're doing it okay now, and or some of the techniques that you might have implemented.
Zoe, that's a great question, and I would argue that's probably the most important question you could ask, because what I see holding us back is not the technology. What I see holding us back is not necessarily what each of our organizations can do on its own, but what I think largely holds us back is the fact that this space and, you know, making a difference in this space implicitly means that none of us can do it alone, and that we have to collaborate and collaborate in a new way. What I mean by that is historically we've collaborated with, you know, certain groups of organizations. For example, we've collaborated quite strongly with technology-oriented organizations. But, you know, for city councils or universities or whatever, you know, they've been kind of more like a customer. But we have to look at things a bit differently going forward. We have to build partnerships that cross over those sectors. And we have to do that in a way that is, it kind of treats the outcome as the most important reason for being in the conversation. We have to get together with those other sector lenses, as I call them, early and deeply, and without a kind of hidden agenda to apply proprietary kind of purposes in the conversation. So, you know, we need each other. We have to recognize that we've got to come together and engage in those open and empathetic ways, you know, to bring each of our perspectives on the challenges of building, you know, tomorrow's cities and communities. And we have to do that early with a clean sheet of paper. And it's then that we can start to really have empathy for each other's, you know, views on the problem. And start to work together and build, you know, public-private civic partnerships where there's a get-give that ticks everybody's boxes, where everybody has the opportunity to contribute inputs into, you know, what could be achieved and derive benefits from it too.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think the collaboration piece and we, you know, that term's bandied around a lot, but genuine collaboration where you take your, you know, but you leave your agenda or your product at the door and just come in as a human being for an outcome. I think that's really important.
That's right. I mean, there are some mechanical things like procurement and, you know, policy, legislative and regulatory frameworks, et cetera, et cetera.
Of course.
That need to change as well. And those will change when there is a kind of a chorus of voices across sectors that are all driving towards the change that's needed.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. Okay. Well, let's talk about emerging trends now. And what do you think the trends are that people aren't talking about enough?
So I still think there isn't enough conversation and action in terms of the citizen or community engagement piece. If you walk up to the average citizen or visitor in a community anywhere in the country and ask them, you know, if you asked 100 or 1,000 of them if they knew what Smart City was and if they felt somehow, you know, able to get involved in that, have a say, contribute their relevant skills and strengths, and derive benefit, my guess is the vast majority would say that they, you know, they had no idea. And so we have to change that. It's not a simple thing to change, but we do have to be committed as an aggregate group of stakeholders to changing that. There's not enough talk about being smart from the start, as I mentioned before. You know, there's this tendency to kind of build infrastructure and then sort of call somebody 3 months before you cut the ribbon and kind of add a little bit of token technology so that you can call it smart. The problem with that is that really what's smart should be allowed to influence the entire project, including the design of that infrastructure. You can't just bolt technology on at the end and think that you've done something that's going to cater for the aspirations of future generations of people. So, you know, that's another one. I think, you know, the collaboration piece certainly deserves continuing conversation. And, you know, governments need to be you know, a little bit courageous and start taking some unusual steps in that direction. In a session recently, I was exposed to some information about the Global Cities Team Challenge out of the US. And one of the events that they held was kind of the reverse of what you typically see here in Australia, where industry players were in the audience and cities were up on the stage pitching what their unique opportunities and problems were and what they were looking for in strategic partners.
Yeah, so I like that.
I'd like to see a lot more of that kind of thing. Unfortunately, cities especially are pretty risk averse, and some of the stuff that's been in the media lately has potentially meant that they are, you know, tending to be more risk averse than what they usually would be. But we've got to find ways to get past that, because without those strategic partnerships in kind of the overall governance kind of this journey, it's going to be very, very difficult for a city which traditionally is, you know, doesn't have a lot of its own funding to actually make this happen. I often say to city leaders, you know, you make a mistake if you think that you can own, manage, control, and fund this entire program. It's just not going to happen. And this, in fact, you know, when you look at it from a glasses half full perspective, this is an opportunity for cities to retake their originally intended position, which is as the advocate of the community, as the entity that brings different stakeholders and voices together to be able to achieve, you know, problems that are shared.
Mm, yeah, and I like that. The courageous is a good term, because I think, like, I've met a few of the local councils now that have, and you can tell just through the initial conversations that they are taking that smart city forward. But you know, it's far and few between. It's getting more and more now. But if they have the courage to do it and show that it can really work, then we can bring the rest along the journey. They won't have to be convinced by, you know, the private sector, but their colleagues in other government agencies can lead by example, I guess. Yeah. Cool.
I think also there's a really big opportunity for collaboration across, you know, regions.
Oh, yeah.
We don't see it often enough. Seeing a lot more of it now, and certainly we're involved in a couple of two or three projects that are, you know, really all about that. And that's pleasing to see. But I think there needs to be a lot more of that. You know, as a counterbalance to the imperatives for cities and the things that they need to be courageous about, industry stakeholders and the representatives of them, like myself and like you, you know, we need to do ourselves a favor and start behaving in different ways. Because it's important that we demonstrate that we're committed to the outcomes of communities, and if we do that in tangible ways, and we have a willingness to co-invest our time and our thought leadership and our resources into initiatives to help, then I think increasingly cities and regions will start to trust us and be more open to finding, you know, those public-private partnerships that will really make a difference.
Yeah, definitely. It's the social license to operate within our communities. So yeah, that's awesome.
That's right.
Well, thanks so much for speaking with me, Merrick. I'm so glad we coordinated to do this because I think we have a lot of the similar wavelength in regards to it being human centric and civic centric and you know that what we're trying to do is the best outcomes for the community, not focus on the technology per se.
Thank you, Zoe. It's been great spending time sharing thoughts. This is a space that I'm passionate about. It's a privilege to be involved in these kinds of discussion, has been for 5 or 6 years, and if we can look back one day and know that we were some of the early people, that lent our voices to the things that are going to produce some great outcomes for cities and communities, including those that we and our families live in, then you can't put a dollar value on that.
Yeah, definitely agree. Well, I just have one last question, which is how can people connect with you?
Sure. So I'm on LinkedIn and Twitter, fairly active, depending on what planes I'm on in any point in time. But always happy to engage with people who want to connect and who share a passion for this, who share some different view. I think we need diversity of opinion.
Agreed.
We need people with different voices to come to the table. Those are the beginnings of conversations that, could be the start of how we co-create our joint futures.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much again. And I look forward to our future conversations.
Thanks, Zoe.
Thanks.
Speak again soon.
Okay. Bye.
It's the Smart City Podcast. Whoa.
Thanks so much for listening to the Smart City Podcast. Show notes for this episode and all other episodes can be found at thesmartcitypodcast.com. If you have any questions or comments for me or any of my guests, connect with me via email, zoe@thesmartcitypodcast.com, or via the socials. I'm on Twitter and Facebook @smartcitypod. As always, I hope you enjoyed listening to this episode as much as I enjoyed making it.
Smart City Podcast is what you're looking for.